Second recording of the day, a rarity for us, but today necessitated it because today we have one of the true greats of the tech sports world here, and it's a guy that I've
Yeah,
been hoping to
right.
have on the podcast for a long time because our interests overlap a lot in terms of the things that we cover and talk about at tech, specifically the volleyball team. And no one was more qualified in my mind to talk about the volleyball team that specifically doesn't play for the volleyball team than Kurt Hoyt, who's been broadcasting radio for Tech Volleyball since 2002 and Tech Women's Sports since 96. So, Kurt, thank you so much for coming to talk with me.
Oh, thanks for having me. Been looking forward to sitting down with you for a while.
We talk a fair amount after the games, those because it's just I need to learn what's going on. You can tell me what's going on. It's good to have someone that can banter about this stuff with. So I'm glad we get to do this more extensively than just post game as well. Let's talk about the Nebraska game to start. What obviously a little lopsided because Nebraska is Nebraska, but what did you see out of that game?
Yeah, you saw that Nebraska is Nebraska, right? They weren't going to allow Tech to come in and do what they did, 20 years ago when Tech ended Nebraska's 52 match home winning streak. And so, this Nebraska team's for real. They played in front of what, 90,000 plus in their football stadium earlier this year. They've got that entire state behind them, and they play a diff they play a faster brand of volleyball than they did 20 years ago. Of course, a lot of teams do now, but the speed that Tech played at 20 years ago was kind of new to the Nebraska folks, and that was as the game was kind of changing as you got the rally scoring era was in full swing. How the game played was changing, and you started getting the growth of interest because it was a faster, more exciting brand of volleyball. But that Nebraska team is right now is just, I mean, look what they did last night.
Right. Yeah. No, Pitt, they made Pitt look,
They
Pitt, what, hit nearly zero in that first set, and
yeah
no one can do
yeah
that. Barely anyone gets to do that to Pitt, and they just had him for three. They had him, I wouldn't say complete control, because Pitt made life a little bit difficult in that second set. But yeah, overall, it's like that is arguably a national title game or a justifiable national title game, and it was still super one-sided for that kind of game.
Yeah, so if even if you want to look at the Tech match and go, "Oh wow, it was one-sided," well, look at the Pitt match, right? It wasn't, I guess, as one-sided, but still, Nebraska, that no matter, that national title game is going to be something to watch, and so it should get good ratings. It deserves to get good ratings.
Everything has been this year, so yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, and to have to play the number one seed in the tournament when you get to that round of 16, that's hard.
It's tough, yeah.
Florida would not have done any better against Nebraska than
No,
Tech did. And
no.
even if you go look at the numbers in the game, we had almost we barely hit positive in that match.
Yeah.
And we had a high number of hitting errors that don't correlate with blocks by Nebraska.
Yeah.
So there's something folks I've been around in the volleyball world talk about a lot of, which they call unforced errors. And those are, essentially what it sounds like. It's not caused by the other team. So if you have a hitting error that isn't connected to a block credited to the other team, that's an unforced error. And we had a huge number of them, but it's not because our hitters are bad. It's because they're trying to find a little window
Right,
in
yeah,
that
it
Nebraska
right, it, yeah,
defense.
it felt like both
And
Tamara and but Bianca just like they knew if they were gonna get these shots down, they had to hit the they had to hit the lines perfectly. They had to find whatever little spot they could to get around that D. It's like trying to hit a winner past Djokovic. Good luck. Like he's gonna get to the ball somehow, whether you like it or not. And so that many errors was like, okay, you had to go all or nothing. Like that was the only way you were gonna get through this team, probably, unless they had a bad night, and they don't have a bad night.
And there's still a sense that even reaching that match might be a little bit of overachieving by this team. I mean, I don't think
Maybe.
at the beginning of the year we had everybody thinking this is how that they would get this far. Because we've lost Julia Bergman, we lost both our middles from last year.
Yeah, the entire middle blocking core and main offense is just gone. Yeah.
Right. And so we were trying to, and we've had conversations, you know, with a lot of folks this year. I'm sure you've heard them. And all this is like, are we a top 10 program at Georgia Tech in volleyball? And to me, it's like, we were at times this year, yes, we were a top 10 team.
Mm-hmm.
The top 10 program part, I think we're on the verge of mm-hmm. that, because you're trying to reach that point in the program where as players move on, because they're going to move on,
yep.
you're reloading rather than rebuilding.
Yep.
Right? Because we see programs do this where it gets built up to where about every 4 years, every 3 years, they get into the NCAA tournament and they go however far they go.
Yep. Yep.
In some cases, you go a couple rounds. Some cases, you go pretty far. And then that next year, once that core that you've been building up for 3 or 4 years is gone, you're having to start over.
Yep. Yeah.
The reloading bit is that you're an attractive enough program that those players are already there in the pipeline. And when they come in, they're ready to step in and they're going to keep you close to where you were. And that's where Louisville and Pitt are right now.
Exactly.
And we're right on that verge of it. And I'm hoping that recruits see what this coaching staff does in developing players.
Yep.
Because if you want to become a better player, Georgia Tech is one of the programs you want to come to become a better player, particularly for middles.
Yeah.
I think we do a great job developing middles. We develop everyone pretty well, but over the past 5-6 years, we've really done a good job at developing middles. And all you had to do is look at the two that graduated last year and where they started in this program and where they finished. And you look at someone like Liv Mogridge with where she was and hampered by injury and what she can become in this program over the next couple of years. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Her floor was already good enough to be a threat for at least a threat for other teams with how we have so many weapons offensively. And it's like, well, just give her 3 years of Claudio and Michelle. Who knows where the heck she can go with that as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
I guess you're treading into my next question of what did you make of this team as a whole this year? I think I was a little bit more bullish on this team than you were from the outset. Cause I remember going to those first preseason matches and I was like, I don't know how good Mendez is. I don't know how good Manning is. I hadn't seen Pierce in person truly. So I was like, I know the weapons we have that are going to be good. The rest of it, who knows? And it looked all right to me. Like, I was pleasantly surprised at how good Mendez was, how good her floor was. She had a freshman season that was like most freshman seasons, some really good games, some, okay, clearly you're still a freshman kind of outings out there as well. I had to slot it in. I don't know if you saw, I put this on Twitter and a couple other spots. The season finished exactly how I thought it was going to finish, which I had said we'll finish the Sweet 16 and lose to one of those teams that's probably going to make the Final Four. And the fact we got the exact same slot in the bracket as well as we did last year, with a very similar ACC story as well of getting one good match in there, but losing some clunkers to Miami again.
Yeah,
it felt deserved in the end. But yeah, I mean, I guess they did the retooling and did it pretty well. It could have been a lot worse than it was. I mean, they were beating ranked teams out the gate. So
and that's why I say we're right on that verge. Right.
Yeah.
Because we did reload with some pretty good pieces that came in. I mean, you talk about Pierce. I mean, she barely played at Texas when she was there. And so there were a lot of ways, you know, in which she's just starting out. Right. And you could see her improvement as the season went on.
Right. Yeah.
And she started to assert herself more and more and the window into which the ball had to be set for her to be successful got bigger as the year went on.
That was a big thing is like there was so many balls she would scrape with her fingertips or just would just miss, or just her and D'Amico or Suarez just didn't have that repertoire yet.
Yeah, and she got those 11 kills against South Alabama in the first round.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she's going to just get better. Because she'll again have another offseason with this coaching staff.
Yep.
She'll again have another opportunity next season. And she won't be like she was at the start of this past season, trying to get into the flow of the game, flow of the matches, and the speed of volleyball at this level. Because, again, she hadn't played much in real matches while she was at Texas. So this is like her first real full-time experience.
She's getting
the
reps.
Floor
is
a volleyball player.
Yeah.
And so she's got the skills. She's got the ability. It's you've got to play.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to... It's hard to be really good when you never play. And we even saw that with other players that got opportunities when Liv went down, between Anna Bosey and
mostly her.
My mind just went black.
Manyang got more, I guess, more time in there as well, with just more available.
Yeah, but
spots.
Also you had
Sandin, we had some
Callie
Sandin
Engman.
Yeah, Callie had those couple of games. Yeah, big performance against Virginia. Yeah,
and you could see that's like, okay, there's a reason they're there at Tech, but being able to get that game experience, and Anna ended up getting a little more of it as you know during that whole injury period. But you could see her get comfortable,
right,
and starting to say, okay, now we get to see what she can do. Just even more, like you say, and say with Lauren Sandin finally getting in the back row and trying to get her serve working and these kinds of things, to where you could see as the season went on, right? It's like, okay, now Lauren's going in. And it's a much better serve than it was the first time she went in. She can be more aggressive. She can be more targeted with what she's doing because she's got the rhythm down. And so it's, there's nothing like playing. These players are good. If you are on a Division I roster, you're in the 1%.
Yep.
Of the high school players who played volleyball and club. That's where you are. And so they're all good. It's just a matter of being able to work their way onto the floor and their job is always to make the coaches' jobs harder when they're trying to decide who are we putting on the floor tonight. Yep. So yep. It's they all do that, and they all were able to perform when called upon. And you know, we'll see more of that from some of them probably next season as well. So
talking about like getting called on, what shocked me was that Louisville game where we were without Mogridge, and Pierce and Bosey have those games of their lives that they hadn't had the chance to, and it turns out it was arguably the best home win the program's ever had. And certainly the loudest I have ever heard, O'Keefe. My ears, I don't know about you, but my ears were not okay the next day after that. There was so much going on with that. Tell me, and it was like crazy because we're without Liv Mogridge in that game, which feels like as soon as she went out, we played four straight five setters. It feels like just the gas just was out, just completely out of the tank, kind of like in the middle of that stretch. And then I came into that match feeling not as nervous as I wanted to, because I'm like, I don't know how we beat this team without our primary middle here. And then it happens. So what did you think about that game in particular? And then also, what was it like to call that game? Because that surely you've seen so many of these games that had to feel like one of the better moments, I imagine, of being around this team.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was definitely one of the high points to get a team like Louisville in O'Keefe, the room rocking.
Yep.
Right. And for, you know, and I said after that match to folks, I like, if you had told people back in the beginning that when it's match point against Louisville, we're gonna set up Anna Bosey.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you probably would have had folks looking at you funny, right? Saying, what are you talking about? And it's like, you know, but she was so on that night that when the ball came her way in that critical spot, she was ready for it.
She was.
You know, and it's nice. She now sits going, yeah, my career high is against Louisville.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, that it's like her career high isn't against a cupcake team. Right. Her career high is against Louisville when they're the number three team in the nation.
Yeah,
right?
Second, third best win the team's ever had.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I hope she's proud of that performance, and I hope that's something that she remembers for a long time. You know, both her, you know, and Pierce with 9 kills, both of them were just on that night. And that match was a lot of fun to call. I still had a voice when it was done,
Good,
so
good.
it hasn't yet reached, it didn't reach quite that level that
Right.
the Minnesota match and the NCAA tournament back 20 plus years ago did, but that they were still playing to 30, and
Right, yeah.
the fourth set went to 48, and so there were a lot more points to call.
Right.
But Jamie Gergen, one of the middles at the time, before that match, said, "You know, we're gonna ruin your voice tonight," and they did. And so,
That's awesome.
and so, you know, she got what she wanted out of it. But it's it was, but those, you know, broadcasters are only as good as the event that's in front of them,
Right.
right? And because that's, yeah, if it's a great match, it's usually a great broadcast as well, because you can, particularly in O'Keefe, because you can feel the energy in the room. Because, you know, I mean, where I sit, you know, you're sitting down in front of me, but where I sit, I've got the knees of fans in my
Right, yeah,
back,
you got, yeah,
right?
you
Because the
got, you
place
are,
is packed
yeah,
out,
you
and
got,
I
you got a little peninsula of one alley of not someone that could elbow you or something, and it's just
right.
right in front of you, and it's the court, and then you've got the D'Amico's parents screaming their butts off 10 feet to your left,
Exactly.
and then all the other parents, like, yeah, you were
Yeah.
in, you're the sweet
And
spot
so
there.
you can feel it, and you can even look, if you look across the way to where the ACC network folks sit for the video side of it, it's the same sort of thing. They're
Right.
surrounded by the fans, and I look across the way and see Keeley Evil, and she's standing up the whole time
Right.
too,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so like her, you know, we're both feeling that energy in the room the whole time, and if it's, you know, not that exciting of a match, or the room's really dead, then you know, sometimes it'll have an effect on the broadcast. But yeah, you obviously are always trying to provide a good show for the folks that were kind enough to tune in, right? And so you're gonna always bring it, if you will, just like the players will. But yeah, a match like that, it's just so much fun. And the fact that between us and Pitt and Louisville, and I know Miami kind of had the matchup on us this year. You know, we just didn't have an answer for their right side hitter, and you know, the freshman. And she's the real deal. And she causes problems for everybody. Grace Lopez out of Puerto Rico, and you know, we just couldn't match up with her, and she went off. And so, you know, the coaches they'll figure it out. You know, Coach Collier can maybe look a little mild mannered, if you will, on the sideline and
Sure.
whatnot. Not she doesn't get into it and things like that, but boy, does she hate to lose. He hates losing. And so, you know, that attitude comes across in the team. And you go going back to what you mentioned of at the beginning of the season, trying to figure out what this team was. I don't know if you were at the exhibition match against Auburn, but the thing I saw in that match is we had one of the sets where we got down 8-0 to start the set.
Yes, I remember this. Yes.
And we came back and won that set. And that same, the word I used a lot with Coach throughout the season with this team was resilience. They seem not to fall apart when things get tough, right? They keep fighting. They know that the game isn't over till you get to 25. The match isn't over until someone wins three, and there's no clock. Just like baseball, right? There's no clock in volleyball. So there's, in a sense, always time to come back. And so they will fight and scrape and claw all the way to the end. And that that served them well in that Louisville match. It served them well early on in the season with the match with Penn State,
yep.
the matches at Ohio State, you know, those big wins they got early on. That was all about this team just being resilient. And it's not just the coaches, it's the character and the heart of the players themselves. Mm-hmm. They are resilient people out on the floor, and they will, you know, they're not done until the ref says it's over.
Yeah, that was a big thing I noticed year over year, was if a match went over three sets last year, it didn't usually seem like a good thing. They were a get it done quickly kind of team, but if they got pushed, it was usually a rough sailing. The at Florida State game, notwithstanding, with Bergman's crazy game last year, but yes. Yeah, they had to play what, five setters, and they only lost once,
right?
Which that's really good to see. You're just like, yeah, they can last five sets and play well into five sets, and those fifth sets that they won, for the most part, they won decently convincingly. They didn't have to come back from behind from too far or be at the brink, like at 13-11 or something like that, and figure it out. So they had some stuff.
Exactly.
That was...
And because I kept asking, so where does this come from? You know, is this y'all, and Coach even said herself, she says, this is just the character of these players. You know, this is the way they are.
Yeah.
I think at one point I asked Bianca Bertolino about it, and she was just like, well, that's, you know, that's how we are in South America, kind of a thing. And I'm like, all right. You know, represent, right? Yeah. You know, it's like, hey, you know, and so if she wants to say, yeah, this is because this is Argentina, you know, deal with it. I'm like, great, do
go
that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
be that way all the time and teach the rest of us.
And she had probably the best single performance of that. It's not over till it's over in that first set against Louisville, where that serve was just unguardable. I remember that final, that final ace.
Oh gosh.
How transfixed Louisville was. Like, that ball landed like 3 feet in and they didn't move a muscle. I was could not believe how much they had taken over that team.
Oh, yeah.
And how just scared it was, deer in the headlights to the max for Louisville that night.
Well, and to score that many points in a row at the end of the set like that, when, you know, you're reaching, you know, set point for the other team, and your back is against the wall. You either score or you're done.
Yeah.
And to come back like that, again, that was just more resilience by that squad. And so that's part of what made them so fun to watch. And even in matches like the Nebraska one, you know, they get down big. It's like, nope, we're going to keep digging. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to try to find a way. And they got closer as each set went on. And they kind of figured out how to play Nebraska. But, you know, you only had three chances to try to get past them before it was over. And we couldn't figure out a way to do it once. But, we might have been, if there was a fourth set, maybe there was, we would have finally gotten over it. But,
maybe, yeah, they were seeming to figure out a little bit of something. Like, it wasn't, they had found at least a way for themselves to play that put up a better challenge than what Nebraska was able to just pile on them beforehand.
And it would have been, you know, they didn't go, oh, that's the first set, you know, we got beaten pretty badly and this just isn't going to be our night, let's just, you know, do our thing and go home. But no, they didn't. Tam had a lot of hitting errors in that first set and she kept coming right back at it, and you could see as the match went on, you know, she was getting more kills than errors as the night went on. Yep. And so, you know, she wasn't like going, oh, well, you know, I'm never going to figure this out. It's like, nope, I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep trying until we figure it out. And they'll do that. And so I hope they keep that character as the team goes forward next year. It's part of what makes them fun to watch.
Yeah.
But you know, if you ever get to meet these players in person, you just find out what impressive people they are, and how smart they are. And you're like, okay, you know, if you ever become, you know, CEO of the company I'm working for, you know, please be nice to me. But but you're going to be there somehow, some way, at some point in the future. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be you know, leaders wherever they end up after they graduate.
Yeah, they're not they're at Tech for a reason beyond just the volleyball. It's like
Oh, yeah.
you get some special folks that come and play sports for Tech. You mentioned earlier about the them being on the verge of like that in that top 10 range, still that one tier back, like just that they're one tier back from the rest of those top powerhouses that they can obviously beat them any given night, as we saw against Louisville, but on the regular, they're probably going to get swept and just don't have the depth, whatever it is. What do you think is that missing piece for them that can put them over that edge to maybe 1 year be one of those true top 10 teams that you do not want to face at all, no matter who you are?
Time. I mean, it's when you look, you got to get the program established, right? And folks look at Coach Collier and says, well, this was your 10th season, right? Which is longer than any coach has been around since Shelton Collier. And so, you know, she's come to Georgia Tech. She has stayed at Georgia Tech. I don't know if she's gotten, you know, feelers from other programs when they've had coaching changes and whatnot, because she came here from Jacksonville. And have you had folks going, oh, well, you can upgrade again from Georgia Tech to go some, you know, to this other place? But she has stayed. And you know, she's brought in good assistant coaches. The fact that once, you know, we've gotten some of them over the years that have gotten hired away and things like that is good news, because it says we're not just developing players, but we're developing staff as well. But she has stayed, and you've got to get that solid reputation, like I said, of you come here, you're going to get better as a player. We talk a lot as Georgia Tech people about the 40-year decision. Right, to come to be an athlete at Georgia Tech's not a 4-year decision, it's a 40-year decision. Because if you stick through it and you get the degree, the opportunities that are available to you are enormous, particularly the network available to you as a student athlete through Georgia Tech. And so you get the folks and they know that, then you know, then you're reloading, right? You've got people that it's not so hard to recruit anymore, right? You know, if you're Texas or if you're Nebraska, you know, and maybe to some extent now Pitt and Louisville, you know, the recruiting is like, hi, I'm Texas, or hi, I'm Nebraska. What have you got to sell them on, right? And I think we're close to that point with this staff and whatnot that you can say, you know, well, what else do I got to sell you on? We're going to be at the top of one of the tougher conferences in volleyball in the country. You're going to play great players, you know, night in, night out, particularly with the new look ACC. The volleyball doesn't get any easier next
No,
year
not in the
with
slightest.
Southern Methodist, you know, and Stanford
Stanford,
and
Stanford.
Cal. Right, you've got in SMU and Stanford, you've got two NCAA teams right there. I think SMU won their conference
Yeah, two
this year.
conference champs, right? Just between the two of them. Yeah. So
And then you've got Stanford, which, you know, like Pitt and Louisville, are perennially in the top five these days in volleyball. And so the ACC gets both that much harder, and I would hope for the top players that much more attractive.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Just
I remember
so.
when I was talking with we got to talk to Smiley Manyang before they went out to Nebraska, and she mentioned like, yeah, it's been like the change from playing Big 12 volleyball to ACC volleyball was notable for her, just like the kind of team she was playing and the level she was playing at on a regular basis was a big thing for her. And now we have SMU and Stanford. The fact Florida State won the conference this year, and then there's Pitt, Louisville, and us. There's six possible conference champions right there already, which makes for a just fascinating stuff going forward and how they build the schedule and everything. Because that's been a word that's probably bit that bit that bit us Pitt and Louisville this year was we kept having to eat each other alive, and then Florida just kind of rose to the top. Well, how do you do that when there's two other teams here that could do the same thing? That's going to be a really interesting proposition and problem.
The tiebreaker formula is going to just be insane when it comes down to it, right? Because Yeah, you could end up having 2-3 teams with the same record potentially when it's all said and done, and if you're a high level volleyball recruit and you're looking where to go, particularly with the demise of the Pac-12, obviously the Big Ten is always, but even the Big Ten used to be a little deeper than they are now.
Yeah, this year wasn't what we thought it was. I think like those Ohio State matches don't look as good as we thought they were going to in the end.
Right. And so they weren't as deep this year, but it also shows you how hard it is to win. I mean, the difference between winning and losing, particularly in volleyball, is such a razor's edge. When I look at all the various numbers and whatnot with this game, it's like I have told players, if you reduce your errors by one, you as a player, you have one fewer error today than you had yesterday. That can be the difference between winning and losing in a volleyball match.
Easily.
I mean, that's how close the razor's edge is in volleyball. And because it's such a momentum port, you could say, well, they lost by 6 or they lost by 8. And it's like, yeah, but
when did you lose one of those points that set the
12
chain of
points
events?
Ago? Yeah. 12 yeah. points ago, you lost the momentum and it snowballed on you. Or like in that Auburn, exhibition match, and then in some of the like Penn State, Ohio State, some of those other matches, that was, we seized back the momentum and were able to come back from some pretty significant deficits and win some matches. So it's just such a razor's edge. And if you're a good player, to be able to night in, night out play other good players is just fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Winning all of your matches 25 to 15, in 3 sets, that's after a while, that's not that interesting. Yeah. But if you're playing the quality of teams that are now available to you as a competitor in the ACC, and the opportunity to say, do you want to sit the bench at Stanford or Pitt or Louisville?
Yeah.
Or do you want to play all the time at a Georgia Tech, a Florida State, a Miami? That's going to be a decision, I think, that some players may eventually be looking at, because while there's not a lot of professional money in volleyball, at least in the U.S., they got a couple leagues trying to get started. Here, like, there'll be one starting up,
I think,
right
coming
after the first of the year, the Atlanta Vibe, and that should be interesting. But that's what happened in college basketball. As you got more exposure and you got more TV and you got more of this, players that might have gone and sat the bench at a UCLA or a North Carolina or a Kentucky or a Kansas started saying, you know what, I can go play all the time against those players. I think I'm just as good or I can compete with them.
Yep.
And now I can do it on a night in, night out basis on the floor on TV, as opposed to sitting the bench and playing when I play. And yeah, you might once in a while get a championship ring out of it, and everybody wants that, whether they're on the floor or not.
Yeah.
But it's more fun playing than not playing. And I think, hopefully with the additions to the ACC, with the exposure this sport is getting and the way that TV ratings are going up, the talent's going to spread itself out because they're going to all want to play.
Right. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. And I know that Coach Collier has got a great story to tell recruits, and she's got a great history of getting the most out of her team and most out of her players and having them have fun along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can say, we're right on that verge, but I don't think we're that far away from it. And it'll be interesting to see the team that comes in next year. We've got the one middle locally.
Logan Wiley. Yeah.
Yeah, who's going to stay home and play? It'll be interesting to see what she brings to this team. You know, there, I think there might still be some other players.
That, I'm sure there's that others that way. Are still floating out there. We'll whether
U.S. recruits or international recruits, who knows? But you know, because they can't really get into all of that with everybody to let you know what might or might not happen. But it's a it's an exciting time, and I'm looking forward, hopefully, to being around when, you know, Stanford has to play in the O'Keefe Gym.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I hope so badly they play here next year. That'd be such a. I mean, I assume we'll get one of the three of those teams of the new folks will be here in some form, probably.
Either we're going, you know, either we'll have a California swing, whether it's next year or the year after, where you play Stanford and Cal on the same weekend, just like you do when we go, you know, we go play Virginia and Virginia Tech in the same way. It's the same deal, right?
The little pod things they do. That makes sense.
And, you know, and then, you know, the two of them will come through here at, you know, here in Clemson at some point, or however they pair everybody up, you know, to talking about trying to figure out who your travel partners are in this world.
Exactly. Yeah.
I
would not be surprised if there are some weekends where they just say, all right, we're sending two of the three teams to Atlanta. You just fly in there, and then Clemson drives down, maybe one of the North Carolina teams drive down, and they just do a little mini pod for 3 days. And O'Keefe is just the home base for a few matches.
That'd be interesting.
That'd be a fun little experiment to see if they ever do that.
Kind of how Division III works in order to keep travel, you know, costs down. They'll bring in, you know, they'll have four teams in one location, and they'll round robin it for the weekend, and off you go.
Some massive high school sports vibes with this as well.
I
want to talk about how you got to Tech. Whenever there's someone we have new to the podcast, want to hear their story of how they got to Tech, what brought them into the fold. So, I mean, what was it that got you into broadcasting and into broadcasting Tech women's sports specifically?
So I went to Tech as a student and got my degree in computer science and was off. I had gotten into the World Wide Web very early on.
Mm.
And I had connected up with a... So I've been on the internet for almost 40 years, almost as long as you can be on the internet. Yeah, there was a time when I still remember the days when the list of all the computers on the internet was distributed to all the computers on the internet
night. Oh, that's awesome.
And if you wanted to know what NASA was up to, you could just go log into the, you know, some server at NASA and poke around and see what they had going on. And there was no browser, no nothing.
Yeah.
But seeing the potential for what websites could be, particularly for news and information, and you get into that and sports, and you get a lot of numbers in sports, and I'm like, this is like ready made for that stuff. And so I got connected up with a website that was created by a book publishing company called O'Reilly and Associates, and people who are in the software biz, they know that name. And they actually had published a book in the early 90s called The Whole Internet Catalog. And so the list of all the websites on the internet was in this paper published
book. They wrote the internet yellow pages?
Yes. And you could go buy it at your bookstore. And the joke was, you know, as soon as you brought it home, it was obsolete, right?
Yes, because something changed.
The internet changes all the time. So as soon as you got home, well, the book's out of date, right? And so they had put an online version of it, and they kind of created these online magazines, and they didn't have a sports part of it. It had like travel and news and stuff like that. So I wrote them a proposal, said, you got to do sports. And they said, okay. And they funded it. And we created this sports site where, and you can't do everything, right? I'm like this one man band. And so to get started, we focused on two sports, baseball, because of the numbers. There's a ton of numbers and data in baseball. And the second was women's athletics, because we knew it was an underserved market.
Yeah.
And this would be something that created a little bit of uniqueness to say, well, what can we provide that nobody else is providing?
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, well, let's get into women's athletics, women's basketball. And O'Reilly and Associates, just like a lot of internet things based out in Silicon Valley, well, guess who's nearby? Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who happens to be perennially really good at women's
Mm-hmm.
basketball?
Yep.
Stanford, right? So this was like, I already had people on staff out there excited about that notion, right? Women's basketball? Yeah, we're all in for it, right? So I'm starting to go to the events and cover them, right? And a friend of mine, Richard Musterer, we were students at the same time and whatnot. He had started broadcasting women's basketball on WREK. Has to be 40 years ago now.
Dang.
Folks don't realize that for tenured broadcasters for Georgia Tech, Richard Musterer today of people on the air is number one. He's been doing it longer than anybody.
Yeah.
And, and he loves the game. He loves the program and has put a lot of his heart and soul in making that broadcast work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm there at the ACC basketball tournament, essentially sitting next to him. We know each other. We're talking and he's by himself. And he's like, hey, let's talk at halftime. And so we did.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, it got to a point where, we had a game where I just kept listening and he kept talking to me and it kind of grew from there. And we work pretty well as broadcast partners in the basketball. And I did that. And then in 2002, there was a person at WREK who was a fan of the volleyball program. And who's unfortunately no longer with us, but he really pushed for adding volleyball broadcasts,
mm-hmm.
and they needed someone to do play by play. And so they just started asking around, right? Who's available? Who could do it? Who might want? None of us had done it before, and I was like, sure, I'll give it a try, and I did, and it's been there ever since.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of. If I had tapes of some of those old matches, I'd probably cringe.
Oh, easily. Yeah. I've got back to my own pod recordings. I'm like, oh, I could have done better in 18 different ways. You're learning it.
Yeah.
You're learning it on the fly.
I'm learning the rules of the game. I'm learning the terminology. I'm mm-hmm. learning, the whole bit. But fortunately, the team at the time, not only were they successful, they were willing to talk to me.
That's nice. That's
and
always nice.
So, yeah. And so that team, schooled me in the game. They would come, they were willing to come talk to me after matches, even when they lost.
Yeah.
Because they knew what it could mean for the program. Because we were one of the few volleyball programs in the nation that had a broadcast of any kind. California schools that had them.
Yeah.
So, maybe a couple in the Midwest, but there wasn't a lot.
Right.
So, we were it, which is when we went to Minnesota for that NCAA match
mm-hmm.
up at Minnesota, and I'm up in this crow's nest in the top of the barn, as they call it,
right,
at Minnesota, where one half is like basketball, volleyball, and the other half is a hockey rink, right? It's this ginormous, it's a barn. But there's this, it's like Duke, right? There's this crow's nest way up in the top mm-hmm. of the building. I'm up there. Minnesota has a guy that's sitting off to my left, and we're up there doing the match. And by that match, because of how close it was and the fact that WREK was streaming and was streaming very early on as another one of those, we're Georgia Tech, we can do that kind of things.
This is a very generic tech person does a tech thing, like, through and through.
To stream WREK on the internet when it became possible to stream audio on the internet, they just kind of did it. You know, it's like, let's
do it.
It
made sense. Yeah, you may as well.
So we were one of the few places with streaming audio. So we ended up melting the WREK streaming server because as word of mouth through the volleyball community went on, there's this match mm-hmm. going on in Minnesota, and it's exciting and it's amazing. And this is the only way you can get it is by doing the streaming. So after that, I was getting all this reaction back of, wow, this is, whoa, both people just grateful that it was there.
Mm-hmm.
As well as it was like one of the classic NCAA volleyball matches, and I'm privileged to have been able to be there and get it on air. But, you know, I've been doing it since then through the various staffs that have come and gone, and, you know, they've all been great to work with, and I'm just grateful that I get to keep doing it. And someday someone will tell me I'm not allowed to do it anymore. But that day hasn't come yet. And I'm happy to do it. And it's a lot of fun, and it's a great program to be around. And I did softball for a while as well when Mewbourne Field opened up, between when Mewbourne opened up and kind of the ACC network came along. Network kind of came along, it sort of became, you know, not my turn anymore for softball. But so I had a while there where I was doing women's basketball color, volleyball play-by-play, and then softball play-by-play. And so, you know, I loved it. It was great fun. They're all great. They're all, you know, amazing program. And my daughter ended up a Division I athlete. So it's, you know, folks, you don't get a good idea of how much work it is to be a Division I athlete. And so I always have the utmost respect for anyone, any student athlete who comes to Georgia Tech, does the work, gets through it, gets out, and so on, because it's a lot harder than you think.
Yeah. No, it's easily of the multi-year projects someone's ever going to do in their life. If you can get through being a top-tier athlete, keeping your body in prime shape for 4 straight years at peak condition and taking probably the hardest classes you've ever taken, depending on what major you're doing at any given point. Like, yeah, that's going to be, it's hard, and getting through it is easily one of the most, how do I put it? I feel like Josh Pastner understood this a lot. Every press conference, he had something that would kind of hint at, like, these kids are doing something more impressive than most of us are ever going to do in the first place. And so loved how much humility he had about that kind of stuff. And being able to see it face to in person, like we do, is one of the coolest things we're ever going to do.
And Tech doesn't have, you know, when I was a student, folks like to joke about management majors and whatnot, mainly because they didn't have to take the fourth and fifth quarters of calculus that the rest of us were taking. But, you know, that major's not a gimme kind of situation.
No, that was my major when I was there.
You are working hard,
yeah.
and there are, you know, high expectations within that space for the students in that major, just like there are in any of the other majors at Georgia Tech. You know, you might not be soldering, you know, resistors onto a board or something like that, but there's a lot of effort still going on to be successful in those majors.
Yeah,
and I
got to see it face to face. Like, I had classes with a lot of my Latin, I had classes with Breland Morissette, a few of some of the football guys, a lot of football guys, just a lot of them, plenty of the baseball guys. And like, yeah, it's, you can tell it's a little bit, there's an extra level for them, because sometimes they're showing up to their 9:30 a.m. when they got back at 2 from whatever game they're at the night before, or something
exactly.
like that. None of us are doing that for the most part.
No.
So yeah, it's a whole nother level. You've been able to see you've seen it, probably all the All-Americans that have come through this volleyball team, since they've started having All-Americans. I think the list here starts in 2004? Yeah, 2003 with Kelly. Yeah, Kelly, of course. Yeah, she was one of the first ones. When you're watching these teams that are, they have those game-changing players who are, like, clearly going to be sitting in program history for a long time, does it feel different when you're calling those games? Is there an extra level of, okay, I got to really make these seasons sound great, because these are going to be unforgettable times when it's all said and done?
Oh, yeah. And you also want to make sure you're appreciating what you're seeing, you know, while it's happening, right? For most folks, most recently, it's Julia Bergman. You knew when she walked on, she was highly regarded when she showed up, right? And, you know, she performed at such a high level that you want to make sure, one, that you're doing justice to their play with the broadcast, because people can't, if they're listening to me, they can't see it.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing the best I can to paint a picture for them in within the speed and flow of the match. And volleyball goes very fast.
Yep.
And so you're trying to do justice to them and what their skill is as a player and what they bring to the, you know, what they're putting out on the court, so that folks do feel like, oh, wow, this, you know, this is, you know, whether you want to consider someone a generational talent or just like, the, you know, we may or may not ever see someone like this player again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you want to enjoy what you've got when you've got it. And even go back to the team that I started with back in 2002, and Lauren Sauer was someone who was very highly recruited. So we're like competing with Hawaii. And at the time back then, you know, Hawaii was one of the top programs in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was always this argument every year with the NCAA tournament. Are they going to allow Hawaii to host? Because now you've got to send three other programs out to Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
And how much is that going to cost everybody and things like that. And so they would sort of alternately be allowed to host, right? Or they'd get shafted by the committee and have to go to California and they'd scream and yell about it. But they, you know, she was on that team in the mix of some players who had been told while being recruited, they would never play for a top 25 program. Yeah, you're just not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so half that team had ginormous chips on their shoulders because they had been told that they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did it,
yeah.
Yeah.
Big stuff.
They were more than happy to make sure that everybody knew they did it because they deserved that, right? And so, you know, I don't mind getting, you know, players that are maybe a little bit of an underdog coming through Tech that are smart and are going to fight and they're going to do their thing. But you've also got to have some of those high level players like Julia Bergman and whatnot. But we've had a lot of players that, you know, either that made themselves into the kind of player they wanted to be while they were at Tech and ended up being All Americans. You look at the Van Gunst twins one of them being able to improve her game, you know, both of them probably could have eventually been there, but it's, you know, to work that hard and to eventually work yourself into a place where you're an All American. You know, Talisa Kellogg was just an amazing athlete to watch. And also to see what happened in and around the stands, because for folks don't know this, Talisa Kellogg's the daughter of CBS broadcaster Clark Kellogg.
Oh, I did not know this. Okay.
So, you know, and the guy played basketball as well. Mm-hmm. So whenever Clark was in town to watch Talisa play, he would be up in one corner of O'Keefe trying to, as much as a NBA class basketball player can be inconspicuous in any room, right? Which is like impossible.
Thinking of Patrick Ewing this season when he showed up a couple times. It's like, well, he's here.
Yeah. It's like, you can't hide Patrick Ewing, right? And so Clark Kellogg would be up in the corner of the gym watching his daughter play, but there would be this ring of basketball players around him. That got the men's basketball team into the gym all the time, right?
Because
it's
amazing.
Like they're over there soaking up with as much basketball knowledge from Clark Kellogg as they can while watching, you know, while in between, you know, watching his daughter play volleyball. And she was just an amazing athlete to watch. Monique Mead, who was one of the, was just, you know, again, another amazing athlete. If you like watching Bianca Bertolino serve, you should have seen Monique Mead serve. She had a season where she had over 50 aces.
Well, that'll do. Yeah.
Yeah. And she did, it was the same. It was a similar kind of setup to where she would toss the ball up to the ceiling, to the O'Keefe ceiling.
Yes.
and then just obliterate it. You know, I mean, Bertolino ended up with 62 aces this year, but I don't think that's close to where Mead ended up in, you know, her best season, because Mead ended up with like 148 aces in her career at Tech. So, but she was the same sort of thing. That ball came at you, and there were people that just wanted to duck out of the way.
Yeah.
Because even normal contact with that serve hurt.
Yeah.
So, it was, and then, you know, again, jump out of the gym, playing the right side, doing some amazing stuff for the program. And so we've been really fortunate to have some great athletes come through the program, but, you know, also to have so many just great people come through the program. Right. And you still see many of them back in the gym whenever they can.
Yeah. Aaron Moss showed up a couple of times. I know Tippett showed up this year as well. I mean, Alumni Day brings the whole run of people as well. So yeah, you always get, and who else, London Ackerman's there half the time.
Ackerman was there several times. Yeah.
So yeah, it's good. I like seeing the ones that can be in O'Keefe making their way in. Cause I think as part of that time thing you mentioned of that getting us to the next level, showing that your alumni also care about the team at the same time and are going to be present for you and cheer you on there. Like I'm sure that has to play at least it doesn't hurt at the very least, but at least shows like, hey, the folks that have built this program still care about this program. It wasn't nothing to them when their time was over. And now a lot of those are Collier alumni too. So you got your run of just the line of Collier and her extended volleyball family.
Yeah, exactly. There. Yeah. And just the athletic program at Tech, the way the athletes support each other is just fantastic.
Yeah.
Because you know, we joke about the swim team initiation in the early weekends.
Yes.
But they're there.
Yeah.
Right. The swim team is there. The softball team is there.
Yep.
The basketball team's there. You see football players there when they can, you know, it's hard for volleyball and football to watch each other because of the way their schedules work out. But when they can, you see those players and they're all supporting each other as an athletic program, not just, you know, they're not just, oh, I'm on this team. And we don't ever socialize or anything like that.
Yeah. It's always been notable to me when I went to swim meets last year, how many, like half the volleyball team would come to every meet. Like it was unmistakable. It's like, oh, yep. There's Julia. There's Bianca. They're at all these meets. A lot of track and field guys show up to the volleyball matches too. And like the top cream of that team, like Zach Yeager and all those guys are showing up all the time.
Yeah. And so it's not just, you know, the culture that the athletes have created for themselves at Georgia Tech, because this has been across athletic directors. It's been across coaching staffs. So a lot of that kind of culture is being passed down from athlete to athlete, not necessarily from the administration.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm hoping they maintain it in years to come and things like that, because I think that makes Tech even that much more attractive a landing place for those kind of high level recruits to say, oh, okay, you're not just going to be supported by your own teammates. You're going to be supported by your colleagues in the program as well as the leadership. Cause I think we've got a good crop of donors that are around the program trying to do what they can to help things along. And so it's, you know, like I said, I've been very blessed to be able to hang out and be, you know, contribute in my small, you know, in my little small corner, to the, you know, what's going on and promoting these programs.
Yeah.
But the coaches, the athletes, the administrators, are just all quality people, and you know, that it shows in the product on the field.
To go back to the aces, Bertolino, she got 62, you said, this year?
I believe so. Sheet says 62 this year.
I'm looking at the almanac, so to say. That's two behind Julia's mark in 2019 when she got 64. Yeah. So she finished sixth. It was the sixth most productive service ace season by any jacket. She got past Wendy Malins, who had 58 and 88. So there's only two players in the 2000s in the top six on this list. Everyone else was in the 90s
when the matches were longer.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to ask Anthony with the team to give me the do the season records with the two different scoring types, because they don't go together eventually when you have enough side out scores.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's different. It's hard to judge.
It's hard to compare the numbers, because like you go to the career assist list, and to see Keely Evelyn with her 64-64.
Yeah.
She had a couple years, she had a year or so in that side out era, but it wasn't, her career wasn't completely in that side out era. So yeah, that shows you, you know, the amazing setter she was for this program. Yeah.
Maddie McKissick's fantastic 2019, where she had 1387, is still just under 600 behind Keeley's best year in 2002.
Yeah,
she had
exactly.
Nearly 2,000 assists in that season, because
And that 2002 was a rally scoring season, but they were playing to 30 instead of playing to 25. So you had, you know, 10 more, potentially more points in each of the, games that went along. The fifth game was always 15.
Yeah.
But you had more opportunities, but what Maddie did, her to have 4,000 assists in a career in the 25 point era, the way she did, just, you know, shows how great she was as well.
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard to get to that 64-64 by the way the game is played now. And that's why, in some cases you do sort of need to segment out the numbers a little bit to be able to say, okay, this is the side out era. This is the,
we've entered the live ball
point era, the 25. Yeah. Like live ball baseball, right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's just,
or
it's all,
dead ball baseball for the pitchers.
Yes. It's all a tad different. My final question before we wrap up here, if there was a match you got to call again, not because you messed up, or just one match you just got to sit in and experience for the first time again, do you have a match that would be?
This year's Louisville match is certainly high up on that list. Obviously the Minnesota match NCAA has to be there, just because of what it meant and where it was. For an ACC team to go into a Big Ten gym and do what they did. They didn't win the match, but the way they played and to do what they did on Minnesota's home floor was something that, you know, not many teams get to do, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, those two are certainly standouts. Yeah, those two probably are one and two right now on the list of things, just because of the great matches that they were. And then, you know, you can, when you find a match that maybe, you know, like that Louisville match that maybe you weren't expecting to win, and the team digs deep, and you find and you say, no, we can compete with these teams.
Yeah.
It's just finding that extra 1-2 point, you know, making that fewer error. You know, that's where it goes. And I'd probably have to go find some 5-set match again somewhere. if you want in conference against teams that we were trying to be better than, you know, trying to say, okay, we want to get to this level to be, you know, in the various eras that the school has had, but, you know, up and down, trying to get where they want to be. And then the crazy thing folks may not remember is Ohio State had a hitter named Stacy Gordon. And in that 30 point era, she came to Georgia Tech and had 30 kills in 3 sets.
Whew.
And, you know, it's not a performance by a Georgia Tech player, if you will, but if you ever wanted to see a performance by an opposing player to where you were just like, okay, we're not stopping her, because they set her everywhere in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some rotations where she was not on the floor, and I'm on radio go, well, if we're going to score, we better do it now. and we did, we had sets to where we were getting close to winning. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, if we're going to win, we better win now before she comes back on the floor, because as soon as she's back on the floor, it's going to be over.
It's done.
And that's what happened. But it's, you know, when you get to see performances like that from these players, because the athleticism folks may not realize, the athleticism that goes into some of this.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It's just fun to watch. And it's, and hopefully in the broadcast that that gets communicated,
yeah,
is the fun of watching it. And yeah, I think, you know, emotionally I'll live and die by what's going on for Tech. But it's just so much fun.
Yeah, no, as I've been pitching this team to people to like come to these matches, come to the McCamish game, is like, you're not, the balance of power and precision and touch and just general speed and all sorts of stuff. It's a perfect melting pot for this, for women's sports, and easily one of the best showcases you're going to get of a women's sport being at its best. So it's, yeah, it's fun as heck. And I cannot wait for next season. Well, I guess we're going to have some spring matches too. So we'll get to see a little bit of action in the spring before. Assuming they schedule matches at O'Keefe in the spring for exhibition stuff. So,
and if you're missing volleyball, then you know next month you've got the Atlanta Vibe to go check out.
Yeah,
they've got Louisville's setter, Tori Dilfer.
Dilfer,
I don't remember
Tori.
her married name right now, but you know she'll be on that team. You're gonna have Lekater member Mene, who played at Pitt. So you've got a few ACC players that folks might recognize on that squad. And so, you know, checking them out is going to be, you know, worthwhile. If you're looking for some high level volleyball to take in, I hope, you know, there's a couple efforts in pro volleyball going on in the US right now. Hopefully one of them will succeed.
Yeah.
Cause it's certainly played professionally, you know, around the world.
Yeah.
And it would be great for the, you know, players here in the U.S. because we're very good, particularly in the women's side, women's volleyball power nationally, you know, worldwide.
Yeah.
It would be great to have a league of high quality league in the U.S. so these players don't have to, you know, do like Keely Evelyn did and go play in Spain for several years and in order to be able to continue their volleyball careers.
Yeah. Now that the television is at an all time high for the sport, like the exposure is better. So to be able to retain them, be like, okay, you can help them become more household names beyond just the couple of years there with your team, to getting them into a tournament or something like that. Yeah. Cause what Julia's in Turk is in a, what both Julia and Breland are in Turkey right now. After
yeah,
their,
exactly.
So it's like, well, maybe we'll see them play again. We don't know. Like hope and pray for that.
Right. And wouldn't it be great to have a high quality women's professional volleyball league in the US where Breland and Julia were here.
Yeah.
And you could say, oh, whether they're on the Atlanta team or one of the other ones, they're like, oh, well, you know, Breland's team's going to be in town next week.
Exactly.
Let's go buy a ticket. Or, oh, Julia's coming to town. I got to be there.
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be nice to be able to see them.
Yeah. Hopefully that pans out. Hey, maybe they can be signed as free agents. You never know. We'll see how that works out in the coming years.
We'll see. It's all in its infancy and they're all trying to figure out their business models and what's going to work, what's not going to work. Hopefully they sell enough seats out at the, I know it is the Gwinnett Arena. It's
Gwinnett Arena, Duluth Arena,
some
Gas
kind.
South, something like that.
Gas South Arena. And so
at least they get an arena. I'm glad they get an arena and not something else. I'm glad.
And it's a nice size room.
It is.
Yeah,
it
Georgia Tech used it when redoing McCamish the rebuild that happened. And so certainly women's basketball played out there for a year. I think the men played out there some as well. It's a good room.
Yeah. I remember it.
Fans of minor league hockey are probably very familiar with that building anyway.
Yes.
So
I've been to a game there. I think my two other big nights there where I saw U2 and Arcade Fire in there in that building.
Oh, there
so
you go.
It's
why not?
I got some good memories in there. Kurt, before we leave, for those that have not heard you and your great work, where can people find you on the radio?
So for volleyball, obviously, and then with women's basketball, I'll be up in Athens tomorrow working with Richard Muster on women's basketball. That should be on WREK, but either way, both volleyball, women's basketball, along with, football and men's basketball, and I think even baseball, like you can get the audio in the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets app available for iOS and Android. So that's one way to get it. And then over the air, you should be able to go to 91.1 FM WREK for most games. And it should be on, but if it's not on WREK, it'll certainly be in the app, which, plug into your car radio if you're driving around and take it in and enjoy it. And if you want to check me out on Twitter, I'm at Kurt in Atlanta. We go from there, but it's been a lot of fun. Hopefully it gets to continue for several more years before it's all finished, at least, my time. But, like I say, good program, good people, love being around it. And, just trying to give my small contribution back to promoting the good work and the good effort that the players and coaches are putting in.
Absolutely. I think both have a shared mission there and trying to bring lights to the really good stuff that this school and these players do. So it's a joy to hang out with you at games. Thanks so much for coming on the pod.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Happy to hang out with you anytime.